that, and people who might have come through the hotel that were part of that life. So mm-hmm. you were talking about Eleanor Roosevelt and concerned about...
Well, she was concerned, I think. I had a feeling that the administration was concerned about everybody.
Well, one sort of interaction here that I wanted to ask you about is, if in fact there was a good deal of prostitution going on, was venereal disease a question?
Yes, it was. And there was a lot of prostitution going on. You don't have that many men, young single men, working in a place like this that wouldn't have a certain amount. Mm-hmm. And so this was a problem. And I don't recall now what our treatment was, because we didn't have penicillin yet. That was the big thing. When that came in, it was much easier to take care of.
Did you see many cases of venereal disease?
I didn't work with the doctors in the clinic, and this would be something that'd go into their file, into their records. I'd never know it even. The only way I'd know is if they admitted. Mm-hmm. And they weren't.
Hmm.
How they would be treated, I really can't tell you very much about that. I wish I knew more about that, but I don't. I could tell you a little more about the towns of New Deal and Wheeler. Wheeler had about 3,000 population, and I lived out there for a year. There was no plumbing in the town. There was no water in the town. There was electricity. It was very expensive, the electricity, but we had water brought in by a big truck, and they sold water at a penny a gallon, which was quite expensive for that time. It doesn't sound like much, but if you're working for wages we had then, a penny a gallon was awfully expensive for water. And so we had a water can on the bench that we put our fresh drinking water in. I'd buy about 5 gallons at a time. And we'd dump what we didn't use would be into another can. What we did was bought a garbage can, to keep a small garbage can to keep the water in, brand new garbage can. And so the water that came from the trucks seemed to be safe. It came from somewhere north of Glasgow, I'm not sure, 20 miles out of there maybe. And so they had their, you'd have your water, a card in the window like the old-fashioned ice cards. How many, much ice you want. We had our water card up for how many gallons? 2 gallons, 5 gallons, whatever you wanted for the day.
The water card, what is that?
That's the water card to tell the truck driver out there how many gallons you need.
Posted somewhere?
Yeah, it was a little card with a wheel on it. You could turn it up to whatever you wanted. And so we learned to cope very well with that. Our hot water came out of the tea kettle off the stove because you had no hot water in the house. In fact, you had no running water.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that public health today would have been horribly concerned about, I think, and that was the outhouses, because every house had one, every place. And the contamination. We had a well right across the road from where I lived, and I went over there and got water several times and used it for washing and scrubbing. And that even probably wasn't safe. Thinking of it now, I don't think I'd do that.
Were you concerned about it at the time?
Yes, I never would use it for anything else except scrubbing and cleaning. If you used it, you could boil it and use it probably, but we didn't. It was alkali water, it wasn't good water, but it was water, it was free water. My husband stopped in when he came, went back and forth to work here, and would stop at the service station, fill his car up with gas, and he'd fill the water cans. A lot of the men did that at the service station here, and bring it home.
And that was water from a well as well? Or
that was from Fort Peck in here. This water was safe in the town site. See, our town site here, we call the project, was perfectly safe, the water in here, but out in the boom towns, any water you'd get from the wells there, you can imagine the seepage from all these outhouses was questionable.
How was sanitation handled in the project itself?
Well, the project was a modern town. The government
went septic tanks, is that how it was dealt with? Or what do you know about the sanitation system of the...
No, I can't even tell you that. There's no such thing as a septic tank, I'm sure. And how they handled the output of the other, I don't even know, because nobody ever asked me before.
Was there a sanitation officer, a public health officer? Or was that a function of your doctors?
I don't know. It probably was a combination of the safety office and the health department, I guess, or the doctors, I suppose. I really don't know, and I've no idea how they, right now, where the sewer would discharge. Some of the towns along here had it in Milk River, so I suppose it might have just gone into the river. At that time, that wouldn't be done now without a plant of some kind. But this is probably, but I'm only guessing. I don't know.
A lot of sewage from the number of people
mm-hmm.
that were here.
Yes. Yes, it would be.
Were you concerned as you started seeing people who came into the hospital perhaps with different kinds of diseases or infections about the spread of disease in the community? Was there any talk about...
Not unless we had somebody we had to isolate right away.
What kinds of things might you see that you would isolate?
Oh, somebody come in. One of the boys came in from a barracks where he has 30 roommates. If he's broken out with measles, he might have an epidemic in the barracks. So we tried to isolate him. And they did have an area up in the barracks where some of them went, where the doctors took care of them. We didn't have nurses. The hospital itself was not that closely associated there, because they had to just take care of themselves pretty much. I don't remember too much about this, really. I don't remember having an outbreak of any epidemic. We talked about it, that the possibility, except for the terrible flu and pneumonia we had in the hospital. I don't.
The flu and pneumonia, or you had flu?
Well,
and
both. And the flu would go into pneumonia so many times. Well, maybe we diagnosed it wrong. I'm not even sure that it was pneumonia to begin with. But later they began giving flu shots, but that's much later. I don't remember giving any flu influenza inoculations during that early daytime.
Was there a clinic in addition to the hospital? Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yes. The Smith, Dr. Smith from Glasgow, had a contract with the government, and they had a clinic over here right by the fire station,
right,
where the garage is. There was a building, a two-story building over there.
If a worker, say, had a minor injury or something, would they, and they did work for the project, would they have come directly to the hospital, or is there an intermediary step?
They would go to their own foreman, and he would direct them to where they go. If they worked for the Corps of Engineers, they'd report in the hospital. If they worked for the other, one of the contractors, they'd go to the Mason Walsh, who had a contract with them. They'd go to them. And at that time, I believe we had an ambulance for both, if I remember correctly. I think Mason Walsh, or maybe Mason Walsh had their own ambulance. I don't know. They were one of the largest ones from the tunnels. It's kind of vague right now just how that was done.
So you had some industrial accidents, some diseases. Did you see other kinds of things? For example, there were some women that worked on the project. Did you end up having any babies?
No, we didn't. Not in the hospital. I had to go to town. I had to go to Glasgow. Later, many years later, the hospital would take the wives of the workers, but at that time, that wasn't a part of the hospital's job. We took the pretty much 22-bed hospital. You'd hardly have room to be delivered babies, so they went into Glasgow.
You did not deal with families even on an emergency basis?
Well, I don't remember that ever happening. If it ever did, they probably would have.
Mm-hmm.
I think they would have. I don't think there's any question. They might have just what they would do. I would think they would. I don't remember ever turning anybody away that was of real urgent emergency nature. I think everyone knew what the situation was and made their arrangements. Because, for example, a pregnant woman here, a young wife of a worker, would not be coming into the hospital for her prenatal work. She'd be going to Smith Clinic. Because this is for the workers. This is for the engineers' hospital, and it was for the workers.
How were they billed, or were they billed, if it was related to an accident? Did the project paid for it?
I don't remember anybody ever billing anybody for anything. If they did, I'm not aware of that.
Okay.
Now, we had one of the exceptions to these things I'm telling you. We had a little boy in there, 4-year-old boy with pneumonia. And why they admitted him, I don't know, but they did. And I have a picture of him taking in his oxygen tent when we thought he was dying. He wanted his picture taken, and his father took his picture there by the tent. And he was in that tent. I've written it in my scrapbook, I never remember, from January to April. And in April, he's much, much better. He's sharp, he looks good, and waving to us out of the tent. And I put those two pictures in my scrapbook, and now, at that time, it didn't seem unusual to have that little boy in there, but why he was in there when other people didn't, I don't know. Maybe Dr. Walden had a special thing he was able to do for him, I don't know. But the boy's name was David Clark, and he sent me a Valentine's Day. Maybe he gave it to me while he was in there, and I still have the Valentine with it, and he'd printed it, he was able to make it write his name. So this is kind of, there's a few exceptions. No matter what I tell you, there'll be exceptions,
yeah,
and
right,
they won't be just, you can't just say it's black or white. There's quite a, but I don't remember, we had a very few of the women in there in from here, but just now, I don't remember too much.
And you were not here during the time of the slide?
No, I was living in Wheeler at the time. I wasn't working here.
Okay. How did you meet your husband?
Well,
I
met him in the hospital.
Oh, he did.
He was a patient.
He came in for what?
I don't even remember. Probably flu or something. Maybe some. He was only in there a few days and out again. And he was just one of the many boys I dated while I was here. And
What would you do with a boy on a date? What did you do?
Well, you'd go out for a drive, you'd have to spillway, and look over the project, and they'd tell you all about what's going on here. They'd point out across here that dam is going to go from this hill to that one, the other side, and you'd say, I don't believe it, you couldn't possibly dam off that much of the valley. The river's down here, it's very small, and you then dam the whole thing. It didn't make sense. They'd take you up and they'd show you the tunnel shafts. I remember looking down in the tunnel shaft and how deep that is, but I'd say it must be 200 feet deep. And when you look down there, you don't look again. It made me a little dizzy just to look down. And the excitement of watching it and trying to make sense out of any of it, which I didn't at all that time. It just didn't occur to me that this was all, how it was all going to go together. Like a big, you watch a big giant jigsaw puzzle being built, and when it goes together, it makes sense. The spillway, I could not see why, 6 miles away, there's no water anywhere near it. They have an emergent, no, you don't see any water anywhere. No, the little river's curling down here, and you got spillway way over here. They told us it was 6 miles. Now I see it's much less, but it's probably from the end of the dike they're counting. But at that time, we drove out the spillway many times. It's something to do.
Mm-hmm.
We drove up to Coal, the gravel pits of Coal, which is a horrible drive, and there's nothing up there but a bunch of gravel pits north of town. We go to Glasgow to the movies, or our theater here. Movies here at the theater is very popular, and then the Green Hut was a place to stop for refreshments afterward. And then there were dances at the Rec Hall. There were quite a few things like that that were, there was always something doing. It was never, you were never bored here. I never got time to read any books or anything. I was too busy.
So the women didn't spend their time together here in the hotel?
Except when the weather was very, very bad or something. We had some, not too much. There was some, but it seems to me we were always on the go somewhere. I don't remember being in this hotel very much. I remember one time, Christmas time, probably 34, it was very, very cold out, and one of the girls had her record playing going. Most people didn't have radios. A few of them had a radio, but that was an unusual thing to have a radio. But she had a record player, and on it they were playing Home Sweet Home, and I remember yelling down the length of the hall, shut that thing off. Or she burst out laughing, too, because we're all here over Christmas, can't get out, and it's too cold to go to have her.
What was that first Christmas like that you were here? You'd been here a couple of months.
Now, that, again, is a haze. I don't remember it at all. I absolutely don't. We must have decorated the hotel, because they always did. But as far as having any real, like a Christmas, I don't remember it. It just goes right by me.
Were there other holidays that were sticking your memory as being a big celebration?
Outstanding.
Yeah, Thanksgiving, 4th of July.
Well, we must have had, but
The
only big thing that I remember, and this is many years later, was VE Day, was over in Europe. The whole town went crazy. Half the town was gone to war.
Yeah.
That was a big event. Big dance at the Rec Hall.
Mm-hmm. So you met your husband on one of these dates?
Yes.
At the hospital. And then began to date him.
Yes. And then
what was his background? What was he doing here?
Well, he was from Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
He was working at that time on one of the dredges as an oiler. He'd had polio as a child and was slightly lame. And so was never what I'd call handicapped, and yet he was afraid he wouldn't be able to get work because in a place like this he couldn't run. If there'd been something where he'd have to leave in a hurry, he wouldn't have been able to. But he did, later on, he worked on the dredge Madison at 72 cents an hour. Later he got a few promotions, as those young men did, and we transferred out to Bonneville for 3 years, where he became a, electrician.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, when the power plant opened, we came back, three families transferred back, where he was an operator in the powerhouse. Later, he was promoted superintendent, hydroelectric, over at the power plant. So it's kind of interesting, from this little 72 cents an hour job to be superintendent of the hydroelectric. And this was not done in an easy way. You didn't get these easy. It was a lot of, he took a lot of home study, did a lot of correspondence school, and I think a lot of good fortune, a lot of good luck and hard work.
What was your maiden name and what was his name?
My maiden name was Ruby Morton. I didn't change my name very much. M-O-R-T-O-N.
Mm-hmm.
His name was, of course, Martin. James Samuel Martin was his name.
Mm-hmm. Were you married here?
We were married in Haver. We went up to Haver to be married in my little church there. Huh? And
what was that like? What do you recall of your wedding?
Very simple little wedding. No money for anything. I didn't have a bridal gown or anything, but we did have a little a few little flowers, a little cake afterward, and a family get-together at the ranch, my sister's home. Very short little trip to Great Falls, a little honeymoon for a couple of days.
What were your hopes for your life at that point? This has been a big turning point.
I don't know. As I thought a great deal about it, I was like most young women, I suppose. I just thought that when you get married, all your problems are over, and you live right off into the sunset and happily ever after. This didn't happen. We were married quite a number of years, and later we were separated. My boys were in high school at that time. The younger one wasn't in high school yet. But that's just a different part that I just assume not talk too much about.
Could you save money when you were working here?
You couldn't save money. There was never enough. You were doing well just to keep even. We saved a little, and when the dam finished, when we moved out of here, out to Bonneville, at the end of it, in 1940, we did have a big sum of $500, which was pennies and nickels, because we knew this was going to end, and we didn't know when another job would. Later, that wasn't a problem. We did go right to work, and from then on, there was no time that we were out of work. That was had a job.
So you were married, and then when you came back here, you moved to Wheeler? Or how did that?
No, when I came, when we came back here in 1943, housing was.
When you first were married.
Oh, first married. We first married, yeah, that's an interesting.
Yeah,
I lived in the hotel, he lived in the barracks. There was no place to live.
That must have been
no way
difficult.
You could live in Wheeler. It was. I lived here in the hotel. I went to the manager of the hotel and told him that I was married, and told him I'd like to have my husband come and see me, and I'd like permission so there'd be no question about this man visiting my room. And he said, that's very nice, that's fine, as long as we know about it, we can come up there anytime. I was only here maybe a month or two when a friend, a mutual friend, rather a friend of my husband's, who had met on the train coming out here, had a very nice house on Milk River Drive, and they invited us to share their home. They had a two-bedroom house. So we lived with them for the first months. Later, just one little sidelight, Joe Donovan was the man's name, and he was the skipper of the Dredge Madison. Later, he went to Wake Island at the age of 65 to help build a runway at Wake. He was a guest of the Japanese for about 4 years when he was in his late 60s. He did come back alive, one of the few that came back. But this is another thing, but they were lifelong friends of ours. They were a much older couple. We were younger. He was 65 when he left. And of course, we had all gone to Portland. I mean, when the war came, we were all living out there. We weren't here. 41.
But you continued to work after you were married.
Not very much. No, I didn't the first years. Not while the boys were small.
Before your children were born? Or were you...
Well, I worked at the hospital over here. I went over to worked over the hospital here and worked until March or May, whenever I... I was married in October. Probably worked 6 or 8 months afterward. And when I was getting too large in those days, you didn't work right up to the time you had your baby, and I thought I'd better... And you couldn't take a maternity leave. That was unheard of. So I went to ask for a resignation. I talked to the office to see if there was any way I could keep my job and still take some leave to have the baby, and there was absolutely no way. So you resigned. So I said, well, I have 30 days leave coming, so I'll take the money from my annual leave to pay for the baby. I didn't get that annual leave. They said, no, you have to forfeit that when you resign. I told them that I had earned it, and I showed them the papers. But no, the personnel director explained to me that annual leave is not something that's yours. It's something that you get so that you'll come back refreshed for duty. And if you're not coming back to duty, you don't get it. Later, that was changed completely. But at that time,
you lost a month of annual leave.
I lost the big sum of $81, which would have been my pay, which would have paid for the baby. Later, my husband wrote to Mrs. Roosevelt about it. We were having a rough time in Wheeler, and he thought that was not fair, so we wrote. And we did get a lovely letter back. I imagine one of her many, many secretaries, because she must have been getting letters from all over, saying that this was being taken care of, was being investigated, and pending the investigation, we'd have to abide by the local authorities. So I never did get it. Many years later, I worked here in the 50s, And our personnel officer, I was talking to him one day about this, and he said, but you can't do that. That's illegal. And I said, they did it. Look it up. It's in the records there. I wasn't the only one.
It's not the only one.
No, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And it was just a misunderstanding of the way it was set up, I think. I think it was your interpretation is this thing, mine is another, and we have to abide by what, if you're the boss, we do what you say.
Where did you have your baby?
I had my first child in Havre, where I took my nurse's training. I knew the doctors up there. I didn't know Glasgow people too well, and I just went up there, stayed with my family, and had my baby there. And incidentally, he's been at this reunion. He'll be 51 here very shortly. Later, 3 years later, I had another child, another little boy, and he was born in Glasgow. By that time, I'd become to, you know, become a little more acquainted in Glasgow with the doctors there.
So what was daily life like in Wheeler? I assume you got a house then. You said you lived a couple of months.
We lived in an apartment with other families, which I never did know them very well. You knew them a little bit. The two rooms in this apartment, and with apartments on either side, so we were not on the outside. We had two outside walls. There was an outdoor toilet out and back for the whole entire apartment house. And that first winter, that was that terrible winter of 35 and 36.
35
or
36.
36, 35, 36. Because Tom was born in the summer. I was when my son was born. So it would be when I was pregnant during that year. And I didn't work after I didn't work after I moved to Wheeler, I'm sure. I had some of my friends from the hospital out there at different times, but I didn't work after that. And we had a little kitchen stove, a very small stove. My husband used to call it the sheep wagon stove. I don't know why he called it that, but he thought it belonged to the sheep wagon. It was so small. And we'd get that thing going at red hot to try to warm the house up. And I didn't think we were too uncomfortable, but he was from Seattle. He was used to steam heat and hot water, and it was really not, well, it was a part of the early day life here. He came home one day, and my baby was about several months old. He's born in August, so it'd be that winter. And it was 5 above 0 in the house. The water was frozen in the water bucket. And I couldn't get the fire to go. I had poor coal or something. It just wouldn't go. I got disgusted and went to bed. Took the baby in bed with me, and I had little mittens and a cap on him, and found he was good and warm, so I put him over in his bassinet again. Mm-hmm. And I kept checking him to see if he wasn't too cold. And I know my husband came home and used a few choice words. He says, I'm going to get this thing up to 75 if I have to stay up all night. He did stay up all night until 5 o'clock. He finally came to bed at 5 o'clock. And he had it up to 65 in there.
How cold did it get that night?
I don't know. It was way below zero outside, but it was 5 above 0 in the house. That's what shocked him. Not to come up mother on an inside wall. So, but this was not, I think we had it a little better than a lot of people. I think our apartment was a little better. We had gotten busy. I don't remember just when we did this, but we had painted it, we had papered it. It was a cute place. It wasn't a dump, but it wasn't, I think it cost us $100 to furnish the whole thing. And that's dishes, pots, pans. We bought a brand new studio couch over here at Guthrie's store for $20. Pulled it out at night, folded up, was a couch in the daytime.
How many rooms did you have?
Two very small rooms. They'd be smaller than most mobiles now. Two little rooms, and they had a little kind of a cupboard in between that you'd walk through. I remember a slight partition there with shelves in it. I just kind of, and that was the only, I think we had shelves on the top and a little rod for clothes on the bottom. Wheeler was a kind of a wild town. And so you knew your neighbors. Some of your neighbors were just like you were. They're darn nice people in the same, we thought we were nice people in the same boat we were in. Some of them you don't want anything to do with. They were just wild people. They were just people we didn't need. Anyway, it was, I think it was a fantastic experience, because now when the former workers get together in Seattle, some of them get together in Mesa, Arizona, and you always build a dam all over again wherever you get together. If you didn't live in one of the boom towns, you didn't have it made. We have something that they didn't have. It's those people that came later
right.
And were fortunate enough to have a nice quarters when they came here and hadn't experienced this. They ask questions just like you do. They ask all about it because they have heard it.
Right.
And at that time, you felt maybe a little bit ashamed to live in Wheeler. You didn't brag that you lived in Wheeler. You didn't brag that you lived in Park Grove or New Deal. We had New Deal, Free Deal, Wheeler, Delano Heights. Maybe you know those
but
names.
Now,
I don't know. Nowadays, it's kind of exciting to say, you didn't want to do it. We sure did. Well, then you've got a...
What was day-to-day life like for a young mother in Wheeler? What did you do with your days?
Well, I don't know. We took walks. You took walks down the store, down the main street. You did your little cooking that you had to do. I know my husband bought a very small electric refrigerator after our baby's born. I was so thrilled. It was a tiny little thing, but it was electric. We called it an electric icebox. And to keep the formula in. I had one of the few of those around. And made payments, probably $10 a month on it, till we paid it for. That was one of our first prize things. And of course, we could have ice cubes and cold drinks, which was something else. My mother-in-law came to visit us, and I don't remember what we did for her. We must have gotten her a cot or something. I don't know how we took care of her there, but she stayed for a while. And one day, the man, my husband and a friend, were washing the car. And he wanted us to go down and get some beer, go down at the Buckhorn or one of the places, middle of the daytime, and bring them in some cold beer. So I took Mother with me. Sure, she said, we took this walk. Probably left the baby with her dad. And we got in there, and she took one look at this place. Smoked, it smelled like smoke in the daytime. It was a horrible-looking place. And on the way back, she said, Ruby, don't you ever let Jim send you into a place like that again. She was, and so we got home, and she laced right into her son. And she said, what in the world are you thinking of to send her into a place like that? And he said, Mom, you're not in Seattle. He said, we're not on Queen Anne now. We all joked about this. For years later, we could talk about Mother Martin, who was so correct and proper and such a sweetheart of a lady.
She must have heard the reputation of this community. Well, what did she say?
For one thing, one of the first things she said to us, to her son, son, you ought to try to find a bigger place. To her, she was horrified where we were living. And I said, I told her, I said, Mother, our house is twice as big as some of our neighbors. And I'm not exaggerating. Yes. That is absolutely true. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the size would be, but I know we had a 6x8 linoleum with a little border on, real pretty little thing in the living room and a little border around it. So it's probably bigger than 6x8, but I wouldn't say a great deal bigger. It had a border. So this main room might be maybe 10x12 or something.
So you were in Wheeler then until 1930?
Oh, we lived in Wheeler just about a year. We moved into Glasgow for a short while after that. And the reason we moved in there, we were having quite a time to make ends meet. We were doing it, but it was just barely squeaking by. And nurses were needed in Glasgow. I moved in there, and we moved into the Keggy apartments across from the hospital. And the beauty of it was we had a bathtub there. We had a bathroom, hot, cold water. Two rooms there, three rooms, kitchen, living room, and bath. And this was like a little palace after Wheeler. I don't remember what the rent was, but it wasn't much more than we'd been paying in Wheeler. My husband had to pay to go back and forth to work. But I took private duty in mostly deliveries over at the hospital. They had a system there where they would, if you wanted to take what they call twilight sleep, the doctor in there was very, very good at this. They gave you a medication that put you out so you wouldn't be awake, but you had to have a private duty nurse to do this because the patient wouldn't know when they're ready to deliver. You had to know it and do everything for them. And so I really, that was a wonderful move. I was sometimes had as many as three cases in one day. And you only stayed with the mother, where they call you when they're ready for you, for her to go under, and you stayed until she was reacted from the anesthesia. You didn't stay, and I didn't have to take care of the baby. I didn't give the baby its first bath or do anything special afterward. So nurses were really, at that time, needed. And so this was...
What were you paid for?
I think we got $6 a delivery. I think that was it. That's more than I made in a day before. About the same. So I remember that one time, and I still have a list of the babies that we delivered in there at home in my book. One of the men came out that I met a year ago at this thing, and I saw the name, and I asked him, I said, did you have a child during my... I had the date, 36 or 37, whenever it was, I don't remember now. And he said, yeah, I had a little daughter. I said, I took care of your mother, or your wife. I think I have, anyway, the date, the month and date would be in my little book at home. And we compared notes, and yes, that was mine, one of my babies. Kind of interesting, because I'd never met him before that I remember. He might have been there the night the baby's born, but I wouldn't have known him.
So how long did you remain in this area?
We lived here in 1940, so I came in 1934. It was about 5 years, 5.5 years. Mm-hmm. And then when the dam was over and everybody was leaving, We were moving out. Our job had been terminated. At that time, I wasn't working at all, mm-hmm. and my except private duty, mm-hmm. little short-term things. My husband took, we sold out, we didn't have much furniture. Everybody's furniture was pretty much makeshift because you didn't intend to stay. So he took me to town. I was going up and visit and have her a few days, and we were going on the train. No, we were going on the car. We had a car. We were going on the train to have her with my two little boys and visit my family, and then we're going out to the coast to see if we can find work.
Three of other things to do today besides talk to me.
Yeah, well, if I get too long-winded, you can cut me off anytime. I was sitting in the train with my boys. My husband had, I think he'd taken me in there and come back to go to work another shift. Mm-hmm. And we had sold out everything we owned. We'd packed everything and had it shipped, what we wanted to ship with us, the baby crib. We had a baby bed I wasn't going to let go off, a beautiful little baby bed I bought. And we had very few belongings. But anyway, what we owned, what little we had, was on its way to Seattle by shipment. And we were going out there and stay with his family until something would develop. And I was on the train waiting when someone came in and told me there's a telephone call for you. So I took the boys, got off the train, went in to get the phone call. It's my husband. He says, I've been offered 2 more years here. What am I going to do? Because of the slide, we had 2 more years work. And I said, oh, my gosh. All I could think of was everything we've got, and the house is gone. I said, what do you think? And he said, well, I'll tell you what we'll do, what I propose we do here. See, you go on up to Haver. I'll come up and pick you up, and we're going out the coast. He said, there's nothing to do out at Fort Peck right now, and we'll take 2 or 3 weeks out there, and then we'll come back and see what we can do. Mm-hmm. We'll salvage what we can out of our stuff and bring it back, anything we can haul in the car. So that's what we did.
So the fact that the slide happened,
yes.
delayed the project and extended your husband's work.
Two more years, yes.
2 more years.
So we came back, and when we came back here, we had no place to go. Went to a little hotel in Wheeler first night,
mm-hmm.
and stayed there, and then went into Nashway and stayed with mm-hmm. some friends there. And later, we got a barracks apartment. That's what we had before, mm-hmm. too. And let me think just a minute if I can remember how we did that. I know... he bought a few little odds and ends. There were still people leaving, and so you'd buy theirs, but they had maybe a bed here or a mm-hmm. table or a chair or something. So we just had enough to, mm-hmm. and we had very little in the barracks. Before we left, our little apartment didn't look bad, but since everything we had was on its way to Seattle when we came back, and it was only, was it two years? Wait a minute now. I said
mm-hmm. 40.
Couldn't have been 2 years. It must have been 2 months. Wait a minute. I'm all mixed up now. No, it couldn't have been very long.
34 to 36, and then 48 to
52. Mm-hmm. It was in 1940 when he finally left. Well, my son was born in February 1940, so I would say that we only, isn't that something? It must have been 2 months. See, I've read 2 years, and I get all mixed up. My age, I don't remember.
Okay,
it was just a few months, mm-hmm. or 2 months maybe.
So
but 2 months is 2 months pay, you don't really matter. So we did come back, and then we said we camped up there.
Mm-hmm.
All of our friends and neighbors are glad to see us back, those that hadn't left and helped us with things. So we stayed, and then we finally did leave then mm-hmm. for good. What we did was select a few things out of the stuff we'd shipped, a few dishes, a few pots, things that were just, mm-hmm. you know, essentials. And we came back, and, I know. I didn't have my second child yet then. That's where the year comes in. I knew something's wrong here. I subrented for a while one of the houses in town. Some people are on vacation. And we took their house for a while. And that was wonderful to move right in, everything they had. And I remember this lady was very particular because she saw I had a baby and she's afraid it might ruin her baby's mattress.
Oh.
And I told her, no, I took care of my baby's mattress. I never let the mattress get spoiled. I remember she was very concerned. And when she came back from her trip, she was a southern lady from somewhere in the southern state. When she came back, she recommended to everybody that they subrent to us because we left the house spotless. We left her place and all. That, things like that, you're afraid somebody will ruin your thing. That was, we lived up here short while, and I was expecting that other child then. That was that winter of 40. He wasn't here yet. That's why I'm fouled up on my thing. So I didn't have two boys, I had one that time.
I need to wrap this up so that I can interview
mm-hmm.
him.
Sure.
But I have a couple of just quick questions. One I realized I didn't ask you is you talked about physicals. Did the hospital itself do physicals? And what were you looking for? What were reasons people would be rejected?
This was entirely out of my I didn't assist with them. The doctors did them. They filled out a government paper. And what they did was just listen to their hearts, I suppose. I don't think the physicals amount to very much. They're all, most of these people coming in are strapping healthy young people looking for work, and it wasn't, there was very few, if any. I don't remember anybody being turned away.
Okay. Because people talk about these physicals, but
yes.
It's hard to know what that meant.
Yes. I don't think they'd be a physical like you'd be expected to get today.
And any lasting impressions, what does Fort Peck mean to you? Why do you keep coming back and going to meetings? What does this mean in your life that you worked on Fort Peck Dam?
I think that was pretty much yesterday when the speakers, I thought they put it so much better than I could, and that was the rapport that we developed with each other, the people that worked here, people lived in the boom towns, the surrounding towns even, and especially the neighbors lived next door to you, became lifelong friends. We were all in the same isolated spot. We were miles away. I was closer to my people than most of them. And these people came from so far. Many of them had never experienced what you go through in Montana. One family in particular, our safety engineer from Tennessee, had never seen snow. And I remember seeing his wife pick her way over the snowdrifts, cute little Easter hat on, and Easter Sunday we'd all went to church, and she had this little hat with a flower bouncing off the top and these high boots on. I kidded my head off her with that Southern drawl, and I thought, boy, you've never done this before. But you learned. And this was something drew us together. What it was, I don't know. But there's kind of an intangible sharing, I think, of hardships, maybe. And, well, the fact that we were so isolated from everybody else, I guess, and the fact that people came in from all over. Mm-hmm. Now, the other towns here didn't seem, they grew up, the people live in Glasgow, for example, compared with Havre or Glasgow, these people had lived there, they all knew each other for years, where we came in from everywhere. Mm-hmm. Came in from both directions, and that somehow made a difference, because you had people with the Southern drawl, you had people who came from New York, you had them from the West Coast, and Montanans, all lumped together here.
Did you see many cases of frostbite?
Yes, quite a few.
Serious enough to be hospitalized?
Oh, yes. Yes, we did have that sometimes.
Frozen lungs?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff?
We had, yeah, that was a thing. Frozen toes, frozen feet. That was one of our problems.
Okay. And you mentioned the Roosevelts. Were you here when President Roosevelt came?
Yes.
Did you see him? No,
I didn't. One of my friends had a baby that day, and I was taking care of her, so I didn't get to.
Well, thank you, Ruby, for your recollections. Mm-hmm. They're really quite unique in the project and will be very important. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for your little...